Good morning and welcome to Focus 580. This is our morning talk program. My name is David Inge. Glad to have you with us. And we're also happy to have, once again, here on the program, Sandy Mason. She is a horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. And once a month on a Tuesday, she's here and we talk about things that grow in the home landscape. So this is your opportunity to call in with questions. Maybe you have some kind of a problem and you're not quite sure how to deal with it. So you can call in and talk about that. Maybe you're still thinking about things that you might like to plant. Maybe you have some spot and you think, okay, I want to put a plant in here, but I'm not sure what would be a good plant. Well, you can call in and tell us about what that spot is like, and Sandy might be able to suggest a plant. We can talk about ornamental things. We can talk about stuff you eat, vegetables. We can talk about grass. We can talk about houseplants. And am I leaving anything out?
No, usually I say anything that's green and growing except for mold in the refrigerator. We talk about everything else.
Okay, then. That's it. 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. Probably somebody else in Extension could deal with the refrigerator mold, but
yeah,
that's not your thing. All right. Well, we do, in fact, already have a caller, and we will talk with them. This is someone in Champaign, and line number one. Hello.
Hey, good morning.
Yes.
Yeah, I have a peony that has broken my heart 2 or 3 years. It comes up with little buds, and I'm thinking, flowers, finally flowers, and I get like 2 before everything turns black and dies.
Mm-hmm.
Is this a disease in the plant or in the location? Can I move the thing and save it, or do I need to start over?
So has it ever bloomed well for you?
Not really. 2 or 3 big blossoms, and then the rest of the buds just turn black and they never mature.
Yeah, it sounds like the fungal disease botrytis,
uh-huh.
Which is that, and it is absolutely, I know exactly what you're talking about, where it is very disheartening because you see these buds coming on and then nothing. They just never do anything. So it's probably botrytis. It's certainly this year was a great year for fungal diseases. We cool, moist for long periods of time. It was perfect for that. So this was obviously not a good year. Sometimes good air, better air circulation, because you find it's generally worse in those areas. And I don't know if the case with this one. It's generally worse in those areas where there's not a lot of good air circulation. Maybe there's a lot of plants around it. Is this in full sun or is it?
You know, it has good morning sun and then the leaves come in. And I'm thinking of moving it to like a noon to sunset sun location instead of the few hours in the morning. I'm thinking, I could maybe move it and see what happens. But I was just wondering.
Yeah, better sun is going to help because peonies bloom better in full sun. So if you can get it some better sun, that's good. Generally, this is not the time we'd recommend to move those, I will tell you.
September.
September, if you can wait till then and then hopefully.
But, the leaves are beautiful. It grows just fine.
And that's the beauty. And that's the beauty for gardeners. You know, we're disheartened for a couple of years and then we never give up. So that's good to hear.
All righty. Thank you.
Uh-huh. Thank you. But I know that you've threatened your plants.
Evil side comes
out. Yes, that's right. All right.
And it works.
Oh,
David,
okay.
I'm telling you.
Oh, all
threats.
Right.
never underestimate the power of a good threat.
Okay, Mom. next, let's go to Decatur, line number 2. Hello.
Hi. I missed the first part of what that woman was saying because they were answering the phone for me. I have a hydrangea, a brand new one that I just planted. Was that what she was talking about?
No, she was talking about peonies.
Mm-hmm.
So you're fine.
Okay, I'm good. I may have the same disease, though. I planted a brand new one, and it's forever blooming, a re-blooming thing.
Mm-hmm.
I planted 2 of them. One of them is just beautiful and green, and it even has a blossom on it already. The other one is has turned kind of yellowish and has dark spots on it. Some of the new leaves coming in on it are dark green, but the original leaves on it and everything are real spotty and yellowish. And I put some fertilizer on it, but it just doesn't look good. I don't.
And these were ones you planted this year? Is that what you said? So you just planted them this year? You planted them this year?
Yes, they were brand new this year, and they were 8-inch pots, so they were pretty good. sized plants already.
Mm-hmm. Well, it sounds like, and sometimes we get, you know, when plants are in the pots and stuff and they're really jammed in there, sometimes some leaf diseases will happen simply because of, you know, it's tough in a garden center to sort of make sure that everything's, you know, far enough apart so they don't get some diseases. So sometimes you end up with these things that wouldn't normally happen. So I wonder if that's what's going on. They do get some leaf spot diseases, absolutely, some fungal leaf spot diseases, but I wouldn't say that it's going to get it every year until, you know, simply because it's a brand new plant. So I guess what I would say is do exactly what you've been doing, as in go ahead and fertilize it. Hopefully this is one that's on a warranty, because, you know, once in a while you can get a plant that's not as good a shape as another one. And so hopefully you have a plant warranty with this one. And I would just kind of watch it and do what you're doing and realize that they don't like to dry out too much at all. So hydrangeas are really water lovers. They don't want to be super wet, but they want to have nice, moist soil. So I think fertilizing is good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think it's in a good place. I mean, it's shady.
Right.
And it gets some sun, but
right.
not a lot.
Right.
And,
they like so, morning
the
sun.
One is just, yeah, the one is just fine. The other one is just...
Yeah.
Looking good.
Right. And I have a feeling it may be just one. Sometimes you just get these plants that for one reason or another are just not as vigorous as the other ones. And so, again, I would just sort of watch it, do what you can, but, you know, don't be afraid to, you know, just, to, you know, talk to the wherever you got it and tell them that you're having problems
with
this plant.
Do you think that I should take the yellow spotty leaves off?
You know, once they get to that point, I would just go ahead and take them off. And it may, you may find it makes everything look better, just the fact that you don't have these yellow leaves.
Right. I thought, well, if it's a fungus, I maybe should take it off.
It wouldn't be a bad idea just to go ahead and remove those leaves. And once they turn yellow like that, they're not helping the plant that much anyway. So.
Okay.
So,
alrighty.
Good luck.
All right. Thank you
very
much. Bye-bye.
Let's see. Our next caller in line would be somebody in Champaign, and this is line number 3. Hello.
Actually, I've driven into Urbana by now. But,
okay. Wherever you are.
Because I have to bring my son into the doctor. We have some spinach plants that are starting to flower. Should I snip off the flower so that it continues to leaf?
I would harvest it. You need to harvest it. Once they start to flower, you'll find that the quality of leaves goes downhill really fast.
Oh, really? Just harvest it off?
I would harvest it and, you know, either make huge spinach salads, or, you know, you can always freeze this stuff too.
Yeah.
So, but once they start, you know, once it gets warm, they flower, that's kind of it. So,
aren't there some plants that you can just harvest the larger leaves and it'll keep leafing out, keep producing leaves, kale?
Right. The problem is with spinach is that it doesn't really like warm weather, and that prompts it to go ahead and flower. And so you'll cut off the flower stem and a new one will be produced right away. You're not going to keep it from flowering. It's going to keep trying to flower. And as long as it keeps trying to flower, the leaf quality and actually the new leaves that are put on is pretty limited.
Okay.
So it's pretty much the end of its time.
What are the plants where you can continually harvest the leaves and, you know, like you take off the larger leaves and they'll keep producing leaves?
Kale,
one of those plants?
Kale probably is one you can, but, you know, pretty much all these guys are cool season plants. You know, the quality of the leaves really starts to go down as we get warmer. You certainly can do it with leaf lettuce. I've done that for where you just do this cut and come again kind of thing where you just snip it off with scissors and they'll keep producing. They do eventually get to the point where they start being a little bitter, but usually if you can put them in the refrigerator for a couple of days, a lot of that bitterness will go away.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, I would be more inclined to say those because they're not quite as inclined to go ahead and flower. Spinach just wants to flower once it gets to a certain age and once it gets warm. So.
Yeah. So just plant it again in the fall, huh?
Yeah, I would. Certainly, you know, once we get actually to the, you know, sort of the end of August or so, you can actually do a lot of these crops again, you know, have them sort of as a late season.
Oh, okay.
So
my kale and my cabbage are probably, they're young right now. I have some kale and cabbage. Are they probably not going to turn out so well?
Well, it's one of those things that it's better if you can get them so that they're actually producing when it's cooler weather, but you'll still get cabbage and kale and stuff like that. It'll be fine.
What about Swiss chard?
Swiss chard is fine. Actually, that is one of those that now that I say that about those other things, that is one of those where I've just gone ahead and actually harvested the older leaves and let the new ones come on. And you can have that one for a long time, actually.
Yeah? Oh, great.
So Swiss chard, you might have much better success than trying to do it with the spinach.
Okay. Well, thanks very much.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you. Our guest this morning here on Focus 580, Sandy Mason. She's a horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. She's here once a month on a Tuesday, and we talk about lawn and garden care, things that grow in the home landscape. You have questions, she'll do her best to help you out. 333-9455, toll free, 800-222-9455. Piatt County is the next caller, line 4, the toll free line. Hello, yes.
I'll try to be quick here. Number one, I've tried for the first time to do some seeds, and I wanted to do some creeping thyme and some alyssum. And the instructions are laughable. On the back, it said to space seeds like 8 to 10 inches apart, but they're microscopic. So is there a secret? Is there a secret to really tiny seeds? I mean, because, I mean, there's hundreds of them, and then I don't know how do people evenly get them in a row?
Yeah. Well, to be honest with you, those particular crops, because you will never find, well, I shouldn't say never, you will not find, especially with alyssum, where there's just one plant. You know, if you buy it in a cell pack or whatever, a little plant, you won't find one plant. It's just one plant of alyssum is like nothing.
Okay.
Talk about microscopic. The plant's microscopic. So generally what you always see, there'll be like, I'd say even 6 to 10 seeds per cell pack. So at least, if not more. And so you're never going to have just one seed of those. So you're going to do a cluster. Now, sometimes what people do is they actually mix sand with the seed, and then hopefully that kind of thins it out enough as you try to get a few out and not a whole lot. So, and I would say that also with thyme, because generally with thyme, you don't see just one plant because they're so small anyway. So generally you're going to have a cluster of seeds. So don't worry too much about, you know, one seed per, I can't imagine what that would look like. One seed of alyssum per 8 to 10 inches, you wouldn't see anything.
I was trying to spread them through cracks.
So
they just kept falling out.
I would say, this is very scientific, I would take a pinch, a pinch of alyssum seeds, and then plant that, and that should be about right.
Okay, and then second question is, I have an old garage, and it gets about 6 hours of blasting sun, and then the rest of the day is deep shade. Is that called partial sun when you look at the plant tags?
And you said it again, I'm sorry, six to...
It gets about 6 hours of blasting morning sun, and then, I mean, until about 1, and then it's in, seems pretty quickly, in deep shade for the rest of the afternoon and evening. So I wondered if that's what they're referring to in the garden on garden tags as partial sun.
It is, believe it or not. And usually, but you're getting to that point where it's almost full sun. Usually you say anything that's getting more than 8 hours is full sun. So... I should say that a different way. If it's getting at least 8 hours of sun, that's considered full sun.
Okay.
So you're almost to that point where it's full sun.
Okay.
So,
well, every weed is happy there, but
sure, yeah. Weeds are always happy. Weeds are always. You know, I was thinking about that the other day when I was weeding. I thought maybe we just need to change our ideas of what's a good plant. We need to just.
Well, one thing that's really happy there is that fall bulb. Is it colchicum?
Yeah, colchicum. Mm-hmm.
Yes. Well, those leaves come up and they look so hardy and healthy, and then they peel over and look awful.
Yeah.
Do you just cut those off and discard them then, and then they come up again in the fall?
Yes, and hopefully you kind of remember where they are that you don't dig them up this summer.
Well, I'd like to. In fact, I may. Okay. Okay. Well, thank you so much for your help.
Mm-hmm. All right. Very good. And I'm still – now, she – She threatens her plants, and now she's saying nice things about weeds.
I know.
This is very, I don't know.
As I'm aging, I'm getting weirder and weirder.
Yeah, okay.
I'm the crazy lady on the corner.
You could start a trend, though. Weed gardens. Well, actually, I have some of those myself.
That's already started.
That's pretty much what I got. Urbana, next, line 1. Hello.
Hello?
Yes, go ahead.
I've got some grass. Well, this is about grass. And I'm not a gardener. I don't know a whole lot about it. But in my backyard, I'm losing my grass because it's being taken over by this little tiny plant. I know it's not clover because clover has a three leaf, but it looks like just a thumb size of a leaf all over the yard, little leaves.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what that is.
And it just kind of creeps along the ground?
Yeah, it's just creeping, and it's just taking over everything.
Yeah, it's probably, it sounds like creeping Charlie or ground ivy.
Uh-huh.
And it, absolutely.
And does it have a little purple flower on it?
Well, no, I don't see a purple flower. I'm not sure if it has a flower. I kind of think that when the season started, I thought I saw some little white flowers, but I don't know.
So does it look like kind of a roundish leaf, but then it looks like it's a little bit of, crinkles around the outside edge or something like that? Yeah, it sounds like Creeping Charlie.
Yeah.
I mean, everything you're describing sounds like Creeping Charlie. It is a perennial weed, as you've found out, and it loves sun, shade, you name it.
Yeah.
Whatever.
It's in both.
Yeah, right. So it often grows better, certainly in shade, than lawn grass does. So a lot of times it gets established. Yeah. So a lot of times it gets well established in shady areas because the grass isn't growing very well.
It's kind of pretty, but
it is. And see, David, she's thinking along the same line as I am.
But I'm afraid it's going to take over all the grass.
Yeah, and you're right. It probably will, and it'll probably take over the garden beds and everything else. So unfortunately, it's one of those things. Either you decide this is, you know, it's green and it's growing, and I'm just going to live with it. Or at this point, it sounds like you're not going to be able to really pull it out because it's just too big. So the broadleaf type herbicides, if you want to go that route, certainly can be effective on Creeping Charlie. It's generally one of those that does require two applications at least. So you would read the label, do the broadleaf herbicide, and then when it says you can reapply it, I would reapply it. And it's usually like 6 to 7 weeks later.
What do you recommend?
Well, it'd be one of the broadleaf herbicides. It's generally the same kind that we would use for dandelions and those kind of things, any of the broadleaf type weeds. There is one product that actually is pretty effective that actually has three different herbicides in it. And one of the trade names happens to be Trimec, but there's probably some other ones too. If you have a lot of trees, it wouldn't be a product I would probably use simply because you can't use it within the roots of trees and shrubs.
That's Trimec.
Yeah, right. And it has three herbicides in it, and that's fairly effective, but it's really good for open areas, not really where you have a lot of trees and shrubs. Therefore, I would go with something like some of the dandelion-type killers.
Okay, dandelion killers.
Broadleaf. But realize one application is not going to do it.
So it would be like 7 weeks later you do another application.
Right, just read the label, and when it says you can reapply it, or certainly I would think about reapplying it in the fall, in October or so, when you can also reapply it.
Now, what's going to happen? Is any grass going to grow up over there, or am I going to have to replant grass?
I don't know at this point. It depends on if there's any. If you have a grass within every 3 to 4 inches or so, then usually most of the grasses are pretty good at filling in those areas. If you have bare areas, bigger than that, then it's not going to fill in. You're going to have to reseed or resod.
Okay.
Well, good luck.
All right. Mm-hmm. Thank you very much for the call. Bye. See, now, Creeping Charlie. Now, if Creeping Charlie would only restrict itself to marginal areas, would be okay.
No, it doesn't.
It will take over. And it will grow into your flower beds and will go in places where you really don't want it.
Right.
Now, that's the problem. I mean, it's okay. I could live with it. It does in the spring. It has this pretty purple flower, and it's green, and you can mow it, and it doesn't bother it at all. And it will grow really well in places where the grass won't, because it's shadier from whatever reason. So if it would just stay there,
I know.
Okay, but no.
But
no.
And threats don't work with it. Believe me, threats do not work
with
it. See,
not even you. Threats. All right.
I know.
333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. Sandy Mason's here. We're taking lawn and garden questions, and you can give us a call, and we have several people ready to go. Seymour is next, line two. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Yeah, my wife has beets in the garden, and she wants to can them this year, and they're about the size of a golf ball right now, and I was wondering if we need to thin those out.
So do they still have room to grow out from the golf ball size? Or are they going to start hitting each other? Usually you want to...
They're going to start hitting each other.
Then you need to start thinning them.
Okay.
Like take every other one or so. And usually you want at least probably 5 inches or so actually in between each one.
Oh, so you
want to give them plenty of room to grow out if you want it. Or if, sometimes people, pickle them when they're really small, like golf ball size. Some people like to do it that way. But just to realize any of those root crops, if you don't give them room to expand, they're not going to.
Okay, so you can eat them at that size, though?
Sure. Okay.
And how big should they be before she wants to can them?
Well, again, it kind of depends. Probably on that, I'm trying to think what would be a good size. Twice the size of a golf ball?
Yeah, not as big as a baseball.
Yeah,
that's
not as big as a baseball, bigger than a golf ball.
Maybe, about the size of a small tomato, medium tomato.
But, a lot of that's just personal preference. Sometimes people like those smaller ones, too. So don't feel like you have to wait till they get really big or anything. So I think that's fine. Sounds like you're on your way.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
Sure.
Thank you. Next caller is in Champaign, line three. Hello.
Hello. I was wondering if you could say something about the extension policy on no-mow. I see thousands of acres of mowing that's almost billiard table-like, and often the towns are mowed out where there's a reasonable amount of native prairie that is interesting. and I see things like coneflowers now that are out being exterminated in replacement for a mown territory. On Saturday, the Grand Prairie Friends were planting 8,000 prairie plants, but when you look over in front of the vet school, there's a no-mow policy. Can you say something about this? Because it's costing thousands of dollars and a lot of oil to do that, and a lot of tractor activity, and I would like to see some changing policies.
Well, thanks for the comments. I'm not sure Extension really has a policy. What we would do is that hopefully encourage people to think, why are you mowing? I mean, I think a lot of it is out of habit and tradition. I think one of the things that's nice, even on our garden walk this year, you'll find that with the president's house, the University of Illinois president's house is on the walk this year, and you'll find that part of their lawn is not mowed. And so it can be done, and it can be done in a lot of areas. And so I think people just have to decide, why am I really mowing? Is it truly because, you know, sometimes they do want to mow simply because of sight. You know, when things really tall right around the street, so people can, you know, they need to be able to see. Might be some really good reasons why people need to mow. But then the other stuff, you know, why are we really mowing? And I think you bring up a good point. People need to really sit back and say, do I really need to mow this, or can I reduce how much I'm mowing? So I think it's things that people, and certainly what I've noticed along, I live out in the country, and I've noticed that the roadsides often don't get mowed till very late, which is just fine by me. But I don't remember that when I was a kid. It seemed like they always got mowed. So it just seems like there are some changing attitudes about mowing. So you bring up a good point, and hopefully people will kind of think through that a little bit.
Thank you.
All right. Mm-hmm. Again, other questions are welcome. 333-9455. Toll free, 800-222-9455. We're midway through this hour, Focus 580. Our guest is Sandy Mason. She's a horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. Robinson is our next caller and someone on our toll free line. This is line 4.
Sandy?
Mm-hmm.
Have you any experience with clematis or clematis if we want to be pompous?
Yes, I have some.
Okay. Will it do me any good to deadhead the seed fringy things that appear after the petals go?
Yeah, I have not heard that to really help. You know, a lot of times, as you know, a lot of times we do that so they'll continue to bloom. You know, I've never seen that listed for clematis or clematis, however you want to say it. I haven't seen that listed. And actually, I think a lot of times people think the seed pods are pretty, which I think they are.
Well, sure.
So I
but
think
I agree with you. I've read every damn book I can find about clematis, and nobody mentions deadhead.
Yeah. So I'm not sure. I think they just – I'm not sure it really helps with that plant. And we could say that maybe about other plants as well. And because they are attractive, I think that's why people say don't – you know, pretty
okay,
much hasn't
well,
come up. So
right,
sure.
Thank you. They are the most finicky plants.
They are. They have a little bit of
– It seems that if you can find the right spot,
absolutely.
Once they get established, they can be big, beautiful, vigorous plants. And yet, somehow, there are other places where they just don't. They're just, and I'm not sure that I understand what what the deal is. But there are some places where clearly they're really happy, and some places that they're
right.
just not.
Right, right. It really is one of those things, and they are a little finicky. But you're right, finding that right spot, and it's one of those things that they. I think the feeling is pretty much is that they like cool feet. In other words, they like the roots to be kind of cool and shady.
But they
and
like
moist.
Their heads to be
they
in
like
the sun.
They like their heads to be in the sun, and so that's tough to find those spots mm-hmm. that are like that. If you have full sun, often it's very hot right there as well, and so they don't get their little cool feet and sort of like dipping their feet in the pond kind of thing. So they like that kind of area. So I think you're absolutely. Right. They do get a few disease problems. I think the other thing is just looking for those cultivars. They get a clematis wilt, which we know some of the varieties are notorious for getting. Mm-hmm. And people may be noticing that right now where it looked beautiful. It was going great. And then all of a sudden, like the next day, it just wilts down. And it generally doesn't kill the plant, but it certainly sets it back and you don't get the flowers that you like. And we know that there are some cultivars that are very prone to that. And so, you know, looking for those cultivars, you know, if you do have one that does that every single year, it may be time to, you know, get a new one. And actually, Chicago Botanic Garden did a really nice study a few years back looking at different clematis and which ones got wilt. And so if you actually go to their website, you can get some more information on the cultivars that don't get wilt if you're having that to be a perpetual problem.
Okay. Champagne is our next caller, line 1. Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm losing my, I think it's a cottonester, cottonester. I'm not sure how you pronounce
Cotoneaster.
It. Cotoneaster. Yeah. It's. Well, all of the underneath, it was looking great, and then I just started noticing that it was turning brown, and I looked kind of down, you know how thick they are, I looked mm-hmm. down inside, and all of the bottom branches were dead.
Hmm.
So I cut those all out and pulled them out, and I had a whole yard waste bag full. And but I'm noticing that some of the branches that were nice and green are now getting kind of a brownish look to them.
Right,
so I'm
right.
not sure what's going
so
on.
So did it look okay earlier, or when it came out of winter, it just kind of looked like this?
Yeah, and I've got two of them. The other one looks great.
Okay, so when this one came out of winter, it just wasn't happy. It just never
kind of did. Yeah, and the underneath branches just dead.
Right. Well, I really kind of wonder about, and certainly something that I saw this year, is that I had actually a couple of different shrubs that just died from being too wet.
Oh.
Absolutely too wet. And mm-hmm. I would certainly, Cotone Acer would be kind of in that group. They'll tolerate some wetness, but I lost a Forsythia and a lilac both, and I know it was because they just sat in. You know, we had so much water last year, and they never really recovered all that well. And then we had some really severely cold temperatures in the winter, if you remember. So, you know, it was kind of a tough time for some plants, depending on their location. And sometimes those individual ones, you know, this one's in a little bit more water than the other one, and you get this kind of changes.
It's on a little bit lower level.
I would almost bet that's what it is. So it's probably experienced some root rot issues,
mm-hmm.
and so it just isn't recovering very well. So you may not give up on it completely, but if it continually does this decline thing, you may decide you want to go with a new one. But
would it help if I cut it way back?
No, not really, because
if
you think about it, those are all the food reserves, and as long as it's got some leaves and stuff on it, it might look better from your perspective, but it isn't really going to help the plant all that much to do that.
Yeah.
So cut off the dead stuff as you've been doing, and then see if it might recover. You might be able to sort of baby it along.
Okay.
Yeah, that's tough.
Yeah, thank you.
All right, mm-hmm. thank you. Next caller is in St. Joseph in line number 2. Hello.
Hello.
Yeah.
My question is about columbine.
Mm-hmm.
I had, how do I put it, a lot of luck with columbine, but mm-hmm. for some reason this year, let's put it this way, I have about 8 or 9 different kinds,
mm-hmm.
colors, and I have two of them where something, and I haven't been able to identify it, has been eating the leaves off.
Mm-hmm.
And only on two. Mm-hmm. And, of course, they're two of the ones I like the best.
Of course. And so you actually see eating damage, or so you've ruled out rabbits?
I have no idea what it is. What they look like now, one of them is very small, and it looks like Charlie Brown's Christmas tree.
Oh, hmm.
And the taller one has had all the leaves stripped off the branches.
Hmm.
The branches are all there, but the leaves are gone.
Hmm. And you've kind of searched around to see if you can, you know, we're a little early for caterpillars, but we're starting to get in caterpillars.
I've looked around like crazy, and I haven't been able to identify anything. And I'd like to blame it on the local rabbits, but, you know, why only 2 out of 10?
Right.
Well, last year, something ate all the leaves off my marigolds.
Well, rabbits will certainly do that. And, you know, and they
will eat marigolds?
Sure.
Oh,
sure.
Okay.
I know that for a fact.
Okay.
I've seen them do it. Yeah, I know. So it is one of those things that sometimes I know that's really tough to try to figure out if there's no evidence. Because usually if it's a caterpillar or sawfly or something like that, you can, you know, they don't travel very fast.
No.
So usually you can, you know, if you look underneath the leaves and stuff, you can usually find the culprit.
Find something.
Yeah, slugs are kind of another issue, but that's an awful lot of damage for slugs.
Is there anything that I can do? And will these plants survive this?
I would say if they've been there for a few years, I would say yes. They probably will tolerate that fine.
One of them is a short double
columbine,
which was very pretty, and it bloomed, and then all of a sudden all the leaves were gone.
Yeah.
And the branches are still there. And the same thing is, this is true, this one is a dark blue, the other one.
Mm-hmm. I would wonder about slugs, though, too.
Okay.
Because they go away, you know, they don't like the hot sun or the warm sun. So they, you know, you don't see them during the day.
Yeah.
So they're doing all the damage mainly at night, which...
Oh, well, I'm not going to go out there with
no?
with a flashlight to see if it slugs.
Well, what you can do is actually, if you go ahead and just put like a little board or even a piece of cardboard or whatever nearby, the slugs will actually congregate underneath there.
Sometimes it's
a good sort of indicator. If you just want something that's kind of flat and it's going to stay there right near the plant, and then they'll congregate underneath. And it would certainly give you a better idea if that's what the problem is, if you just have a lot of slugs. It's certainly been perfect weather for slugs.
Lately, okay, so. Well, that's what I'll try.
Yeah.
And thank you very much.
Okay,
yeah.
Very good.
Bye now.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. Next caller up, somebody in Champaign calling on a cell phone, line 3. Hello.
Good morning.
Yes.
I have hopefully a quick question and then maybe a little more involved one. My tarragon has been coming up by itself for the last 2 years, and it's just a lovely growth tarragon, and it's already, you know, probably 30 inches tall.
Mm-hmm.
So what I want to do is cut it off and go ahead and use some of the fresh and dry it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm wondering, excuse me, if I cut it off, will I get new leaves and shoots this year?
Sure.
And, you know, how much should I leave in order to ensure new growth?
Well, I'll be honest with you, when I haven't been able to actually kill mine. I mean, I really have done some major pruning because it actually gets a little taller than I want it to be. So I've done some major pruning. You know, I'm not sure I'd take it down the ground by any means, but I certainly have done some major pruning on it. And generally, you're going to want the young leaves anyway if you're actually going to eat them. So generally, you're going to want the young stuff and maybe not take it to the ground. I probably still maybe leave, I don't know, 18 inches or so of it. You certainly could take it down to that and not worry about still having plenty of leaves.
Okay. Then the other question is I've always had what I would have to describe as a knobby lawn.
A knobby lawn? Okay.
Yes. When you walk through the lawn, it's like knobs. Sometimes, you know, your ankle just wants to turn over.
Hmm.
And I've had it rolled once.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that made it better for a while. But, you know, it's gone back. And I don't know if it's because of the way the grass grows or whatever. I'm tempted to just, you know, have the whole thing tilled and start over.
Mm-hmm.
Thought of using all the water to replace an entire lawn,
mm-hmm.
whether it's seeded or sodded, kind of bothers me. And I just wonder if there's anything you can think of to help with that.
Mm-hmm. Now, do you feel like, or you may not know what kind of grass you have out there, but do you think it's Kentucky bluegrass, perennial ryegrass, or that kind of grass?
It's a variety. It's a variety, and we live, there's a field right behind us on the west side, so when they treat, you know, we get spray, so it impacts some of the things that grow, and, you know, I'm another person who's got the creeping Charlie taking over my mm-hmm. backyard mm-hmm. and trying to go up front.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just an odd mix of stuff.
Well, the reason I was asking that, you know, Kentucky bluegrass, perennial ryegrass, it gives us that typical, what we think of as sod, kind of a flatter kind of thing. But if you have like tall fescue or some of the clumpy type grasses, they tend to be sometimes, especially if you have an older pasture type tall fescue, which is that big wide blade, those tend to be uh-huh. clumpy. And so because they're clumpy like that, that's just the way they grow, it tends to give you a more of a knobby appearance if they're not really full or if you don't have some of the turf type tall fescue. So that's why I was asking about what kind of grass you have. And if it still seems to be that thin blade like we typically would think of with grasses, what you might want to do is actually, before you completely redo the whole thing, you know, you actually can put some soil or even compost sort of on top of these areas to try to fill in a few spots. Do you think that might be helpful? You may find
sure.
that you really need to fill in some spots. And you can do like an inch or so, usually about an inch or so, and then kind of let the grass grow up through it. And then you can put a little more on, let the grass grow up through it. So a lot of times you can just, through a little bit of patience and diligence, you can sort of, you know, bring some of these lower areas up. Rather than, I think I would recommend trying that before you, you know, have to completely redo your lawn. But I'd still sort of look at the grasses that you have and think about, you know, or is this knobby simply because I don't have the sod type grasses that I typically would think of. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. And I think, you know, sometimes the lawn has been thin and we've, you know, thrown seed out, and quite often we get just what's a mixed variety because we have sun and shade,
yeah.
and, you know, different conditions.
Right.
So
right.
I doubt if there's any one single type of grass there, and certainly with the weeds and stuff that have blown in, there's all kinds of things there. Mm-hmm. But mm-hmm. that sounds like a good idea. And when you put it down, do you kind of press it down? Would you tamp it down?
Well, I would just take a garden rake, and what you're trying to do is sort of work it into so the grass can grow up through it. So you're just kind of working
right.
in a little bit. So it's not a big, thick layer. You should still be able to see the grass blades through it when you put the soil down
sure.
or the compost. Actually, compost is pretty good, too, to go ahead and just do that. And then you just kind of keep doing that over time, and you may find you can sort of raise these areas. And I definitely recommend that over trying to just compact the soil continually through rolling. So.
All righty.
Okay,
thanks
good luck.
Much.
All right, very good. We have a number of other callers here, and we're moving into about our last 15 minutes here on the show. Sandy Mason's here. She's a horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. Once a month on a Tuesday, she's here on the program, and we take questions on lawn and garden care, and we're open to as many callers as we can possibly take. 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. Next up, someone in Urbana. Line one. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Any advice on potatoes and cutworms? Potatoes stems are almost as thick as my little finger, which isn't a very big little finger. But the cutworms are taking them off right at the soil line or a little below.
Yeah. Actually, a couple things you can do. You can... if you can still do it, it might be a little harder at this point. But when they're young, you can actually use, like, cardboard tubes. You get paper towels or toilet paper or any of that stuff. Sometimes you can put those around them. Or actually tin foil. You can put tin foil around the stem just to try to protect it. And usually those kind of things will help.
Needs to go a little bit below the surface
yes.
of the soil?
You just kind of just barely sort of, you just put in it just below the soil. But as you said, you're just trying to protect that kind of where the stem meets the soil line. So at this point, it might be tin foil might be a little bit easier simply because it's a little bit harder to put the tube on. Mm-hmm.
You're wrapped right against the plant?
Yeah, you don't want to put it really tight, but yeah, you just put it much right around the plant, and usually that's enough to take care of it.
I have used 7,
mm-hmm.
Applying it right to the soil.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't seem to be totally effective. So far, they've stayed in one row, but I have
mm-hmm.
one. That they'll spread to other plants.
Right. That's why I think the whole collar idea actually works out pretty well because it's a non-chemical way, so you can just get it out there, and it's out there when the cutworms are out there and that kind of thing. So I would definitely try that.
Nasty little critters.
Yeah. It's talk about disheartening. They're the other ones that are pretty disheartening. By the time things are really starting to grow, they cut things off.
By any chance the potatoes will come back up or not?
I don't know about that. I don't know. Usually by now, at this point, they pretty well have sent up the shoots they're going to send up.
Yeah, they're probably a foot or more tall and starting to bloom.
Yeah. You might have a little baby potatoes by now. You could have a little new potatoes.
Well, they're the fingerling type potatoes, so maybe I should explore.
They'd be little. Yeah, they'd be little, but definitely fingerlings.
Thanks, Sandy.
Sure.
Thank you. We'll continue, and our next caller is, we have a couple of people here in Champaign, so the next caller is Champaign in line 2. Hello.
Hi.
Mm-hmm.
I'm calling about a problem with vinca ground cover.
Mm-hmm.
It's great in the spring. It's beautiful and green, and it flowers, and all of a sudden, long about now, it starts to get brown, and it just dies.
Yeah.
All the leaves curl up and die. It doesn't die back entirely, but it looks pretty bad.
Mm-hmm.
I've tentatively thought it's probably dieback.
Mm-hmm.
Does that
mm-hmm.
sound possible?
Mm-hmm.
Sound right?
Yeah, unfortunately, they do get that.
Okay.
There are some fungicides you could do. Sometimes just rent. Has this been in there for a number of years?
Yeah. When it was first planted, it was fine, and it's probably been there for the last 5 or 10 years.
It seems to be, at least from what I've noticed, it tends to be on those older plantings. So sometimes it just actually doing some rejuvenation, we actually dig out some of those areas where, because it's usually in a certain area of the planting. I don't know if you've noticed that, but it's usually in a certain area of the planting, and actually just digging those out and just sort of getting a lot of that out and sort of helping to sort of rejuvenate the patch. Sometimes that helps. Otherwise, you would have to go with a fungicide and actually do that. But you'd have to do it early in the season when they're first coming out, and you probably have to do it every year. So I think I would really think about rejuvenating it and see if that doesn't help. And then maybe think about a fungicide next year. But it's a tough one, but unfortunately it's fairly common in older plantings of vinca.
So when you say rejuvenate, would you just remove the problematic areas and put in new plants?
Or you certainly could put in new plants, or you may just decide you want the stuff that's left to sort of let that sort of fill in that area. So I don't know how big an area we're talking about. If it's a big area, you might think about replanting it, but...
Okay.
So kind of decide. But that's the one thing that I've seen that's helped is sort of getting that older stuff out, because I think it's pretty well systemic. Most of the time the disease is systemic, and it's actually in the roots and all that kind of stuff. So you're trying to get all that out of there.
So once it's started, you'll just keep getting it every year?
Yes, more than likely, yes,
okay,
unfortunately.
And if I go with the fungicide route, what's a good thing to use?
I'd have to look that up. I think it's probably chlorothalonil is one of those. I'm trying to think of some daconil. It'd be one of those things you'd really want to check and read the label and see if it's listed on that for some of the root rot, stem rots.
Okay. So it's actually a root rot?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. Is there any other, if we even go with replacing it, with a different ground cover? Is there any other ground cover that would do well in shade in an area? This is under some huge river birches,
mm-hmm.
So there's not a lot of good soil. Any other ground cover that might work there?
Okay. So you're looking for a typical ground cover, not like hostas or some of the other kind of shady plants?
Right, yeah. We do have some hostas, but just typical ground cover, yeah.
Right. Well, you might think about, actually, one that I've really liked is called lamium or dead nettle.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And it adds silvery leaves to it, and then it has either a pink or purple or white flower.
Yeah.
And actually, there's one called White Nancy, and I think there's a Purple Nancy, and I don't know, Purple Dragon. There's a number. But they have silver on their leaves, and those seem to be, once they get established, they're pretty drought tolerant and seem to be pretty tough. And in the long run, that might be a good idea to get a little bit more diversity in there. But I've been pretty happy with those on what they do. Now, they're not evergreen like we get with vinca, but they do, you know, I've had mine, you know, well until December. You know, the leaves are still looking okay.
Okay. Could you try and use a combination of them?
Sure. I mean, you certainly could.
Okay.
And that's not necessarily a bad idea to try to get a little difference in there. But I think that area of the vinca is going to be an issue for you.
Okay. And would the root rot affect the lamium also?
I don't think on that. I think the root rot, stem rot that's on the vinca, I think is pretty specific to vinca.
Okay.
Which is the other issue. If you're replanting with more vinca, then you wonder how long it's going to take before it gets it again. So it might not be a bad idea to try something completely different.
Okay, good. Thank you much.
Sure.
All right, very
Bye-bye.
Good. And let's see. Next is also somebody in Champaign. This is line three.
Yes,
hello?
That's me, I
yes.
think.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Sandy, I'm going to give you a second's break from solving problems and tell a victory story in gardening. I'm the German teacher at Centennial High School, and this is a real shout out to the Master Gardener contingent of our PTSA. They always send out a little call for proposals if you want to get things for your classroom. And I said, well, we have a courtyard there at Centennial, and I've always had this idea about putting in an alpine garden, like a German alpine garden. And when this proposal went into the PTSA, I think the master gardeners just ran with it and used the money to get materials for us. And then I brought the kids out on a couple of afternoons. They put paving stones to build a kind of a well. I really didn't have any idea how they were going to do this, but they had the kids build something that looks like a well, filled this then with dirt, and planted alpine flowers across the top and with rocks. And we were kind of teasing about how we could give it, you know, the common alpine mountain names. put a real nice sign on the front, and people have been just sending me so many compliments. But it was just great to have the kids out working with these very knowledgeable adults in our community. And for me, it's just so gratifying every time I see this thing to think I had this, like, rough idea, and then to see it actualized has just been fantastic. So, you know, all teachers out there, you've got master gardeners among your parents, and they have really great ideas. So I wanted to say something publicly about that. So thanks a lot for the time.
Thank you. Well, thank you so much, and I will pass that on to the group, because I know they've been doing, actually for a number of years now, they've been working at the Centennial School. So thank you so much for saying that.
Thank you. And I guess we, you know, one thing you want to mention, we do from time to time talk about the demonstration garden, which is a project of the Master Gardeners, which is the kind of thing that anybody, anytime you have the time, it's on Lincoln Avenue, just a little bit south of Florida. And it's a great place to just go take a little walk and kind of see what's there and maybe get some ideas about things that you might want to plant in your yard.
And I really encourage people to go to really anywhere where you have a demonstration garden or certainly idea garden as well, in the fact that, you know, usually the plants are labeled. So you get an idea, is this really something I want in my garden? Maybe some problems that you might have, because we have problems there too. And it really is a great opportunity. And it's, you know, it's free. You just go over there and walk around, and it's really a lot of fun.
Yeah, so. And the last weekend of the month is going to be the garden walk here in Champaign-Urbana.
Absolutely. June 27th is going to be the Champaign County Master Gardeners Garden Walk. It runs from 9 to 4, rooms with a view garden walk. So these gardens have, you know, like patios. If you're thinking about those, more and more people are thinking about moving their homes outside and really using patios and stuff. So I think that's going to be a lot of fun. Actually, the president's house, the University of Illinois president, he and his wife have opened up their home and garden to the public. So you can come and see what their garden looks like as well as Japan House. So there's some public ones as well as private ones. So that's June 27th. And actually June 14th, I should say, the Master Gardeners in Macon County are having their garden walk on June 14th. So this is garden walk time. So if you're interested, you know, get out of your own garden and walk around and look at other gardens.
All right. Let's talk with somebody else here in Champaign, line number one. Hello.
Hi.
Yes. Hi.
I have some landscaping done around our house, and everything's doing great except the grasses. And this was done maybe 3 years ago, and so the grasses didn't live through the winter. They came back and replaced them. And then some of them live the next year, and now this year, even some that had been alive through two seasons are now did not come back and just were brown. There's like tall zebra grass, but those are the ones that live 2 years, and now only one of the three plants is left. The Hamlin grass that they planted has never seemed to do well. And then there's also a miscanthus, which, you know, I heard about the July, you know, supposed to grow like crazy and so forth. It's not doing well. And I'm just wondering, you know, this was a prairie once. I would think there should be some kind of something that's adapted to this climate, and I could plant some kind of grass and I'd have some nice tall grasses around.
Mm-hmm. Now, do you have really clay soil or a lot of shade or anything?
It's
like
a
that?
Lot of shade. We live in a wooded part in Champaign County, and this area we had landscaped is sort of the house is sort of shaped like a V, and this is the notch up on either side of the sidewalk that comes up towards the front.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's the house is tall on each side, so it's fairly shaded, and if that weren't bad enough, there's of course trees around. The soil is, you know, is really good soil. I mean, this is the first time any structure's ever been built here, so it's, you know, been in a forest bed for, I don't know, hundreds of years or something.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, does it get, how many hours of sun does this area get, probably?
Direct sunlight coming down on it, maybe 3 or 4 in the middle of the day.
I think that may be your problem, to be honest with you. Most of the, pretty much, well, all the grasses that you mentioned, those are full sun plants. I mean, these are, you know, in their native areas would have been open air,
sure,
you know, prairie
sure.
land kind of thing. So they're full sun. They're not shady
right.
plants. So generally when we're talking about that, we're saying at least 8 hours. At least
okay.
8 hours, 6 at the minimum. So I think you're seeing a problem where they never thrive because it's not sunny enough.
Right.
So I think you may have to look at some other plant selections.
Are there any grasses that would
there's a few. There are a few. Actually, Northern sea oats is actually a shady grass, but I will tell you, it does reseed like crazy. It's a native grass, northern sea oats. It's a native grass, but it reseeds like crazy. So just so you know, I've warned you.
Everything will be.
I've warned you.
Sea oats.
So I will just going to warn you that, but it's very pretty and it's a very nice seed head and all that kind of stuff.
And it comes up tall and something.
It's not super tall. I can't think of any grasses right offhand that do well in shade that are tall. I think the tallest you're going to get is probably with the like northern sea oats or whatever, and that might be 3 feet. So I think 3 feet is going to be your tops.
3 feet's fine.
Okay, so northern sea oats might be one. There are lots of actually some of the sedges that are called carricks, and there's a bunch of those that actually tolerate shade just fine and actually do well in shade. So some of the sedges do well in shade. There's a one called Japanese Hakana Chloa, and I know you're going to want me to spell that. Maybe Japanese Hakone, H-A-K-O-N-E. Maybe that's good enough. Japanese Hakone grass is another one of those. It's not very tall, but it's a nice kind of arching, and they have some yellow versions of it that are very attractive and very pretty.
Where would I get these plants?
Pretty much all that I'm talking about, you should be able to get in most garden centers, like regular nurseries, garden centers. You should be able to find them there. And so those are very nice. And I think you're going to have trouble with all the ones you mentioned. You're always going to have trouble with them. It's too clayey, too shady.
Right. Okay. So northern sea oats, sea as in the...
Yes. Yeah.
And then
Hakone grass. Japanese Hakone would be one of them. And then the carexes, sedges. There's a bunch of sedges out there that do very well in shade because that's normally where they'd be. There's a native grass called bottlebrush grass. It's very pretty. I don't know how well you'll be able to find that one, but bottlebrush grass might be a nice one. So there are a few out there, but just to realize that shady grasses are pretty few and far between.
Okay, well, that explains it, and I appreciate it. Thank you.
Okay, sure.
All right, thank you. Well, we're pretty much at the point where we're going to have to finish up. Is there anything last sort of thing you'd like to leave with people? I guess we can mention again. We just did it a couple minutes ago, but we could mention again that we have two garden walks coming up. The one, again, here, you know, I don't know how many people are listening here in Champaign-Urbana, but the local one is at the end of the month. So that would be Champaign County Master
Gardeners. June 27th. And actually, we're going to have some programs there at the Idea Garden that same day. Actually, we're going to have one on Ekabana. Actually, Diane Nolan's going to be giving a talk. And then I'm going to be giving a talk on the wonderful world of weeds. So June 27th, you can come to the, you know, Weed 'em and Reap.
Wonderful
so we're actually, here. Yeah, there you go. So June 14th is the Macon County. And then also in your same area, usually Vermilion County Master Gardeners, Edgar County Master Gardeners, they all have garden walks. So just check with your local extension office and see when the garden walk is coming.
Okay. And in the meantime, the U of I extension has a really nice website. So if you have internet access, that's a good place to get a lot of information. And then if you have questions, these kinds of questions, you can get with whoever is the extension person closest to you. And they should be listed in the phone book, so you can find them that way. And also tune in for the program Illinois Gardener, Thursday nights at 7 on WILL-TV. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Sandy Mason, she's a horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. She's with us every month, always on a Tuesday, to talk about lawn and garden care.